ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। This morning I want to speak about Varnashram Dharma. You might say, well, why speak about this again and again? It's somewhat like Srila Prabhupada speaking again and again that we're not the body, because it's something that has to be understood. It's essential to our understanding or our even beginning to enter spiritual life. But at the same time, it seems counterintuitive. In other words, it doesn't seem like we're not the body. It seems like we're the body. Seems like that. So we have to go a little deeper. And we have to hear again and again to understand. So in the same way, this Varnashram mission, it's a great mission. It's not a small thing. At the present time, if at all we're thinking about Varnashram, we're thinking about a few people living on a farm, but that wasn't Srila Prabhupada's vision. He was talking about literally millions, millions. So it may start off like Varaha, very small, but then should become very big also. And that is required in so many ways. Just to save people from this horrible materialistic society. That's one thing. That's like liberation. It's in the Chaturvarga, the four aims of human life. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. So, Dharma, Artha, Kama, religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification, they're meant for living in this world, and moksha is meant for liberation from it. But beyond that is premapumarto mahan. The real great goal of human life is to attain love of Krishna. So in the same way, this simple living might save people from the worst of the horrible modern society, but over and above that, the individual members have to develop Krishna consciousness. And actually, all our devotees should take to this. Srila Prabhupada said that cities, they're meant for preaching. Otherwise, there's no need to be in the city. So, but now this what's called congregational preaching has spread, and there are so many devotees living in the cities. But if we consider what a tremendous task it is to become Krishna conscious, to be free of all material desires and fully absorbed in Krishna, it's not really going to happen if we spend most of our life absorbed simply in making money, which is what most people, they spend their life doing. And they have to associate with non-devotees and develop. To do that, it's required to have a consciousness that's not Krishna conscious. One has to divert one's attention. It's not a favorable situation for spiritual advancement. So, those who are householders, they should all come running to the farm. But then they're afraid that things won't work out, and they feel some security in the city and their job, and they're not accustomed to that or ready for that, which is why we have to speak about it again and again and again, so that they can become at least mentally accustomed to it. That's step by step. The caterpillar, the example is given in Shastra. The caterpillar is on one leaf to transfer his body to another leaf. First he puts the first part of his body goes on the leaf, and the back part is still on the other leaf, and then he pulls himself over. So there's really no reason. If one's goal of life is to be Krishna conscious, and one is in householder life, there's really no reason to be in the city. Unless one is very much involved in preaching there. There may be other reasons, that one may have some debts to pay off, but otherwise, there's no real reason. Everyone should come live on the farm, but not everyone's ready for that. Srila Prabhupada also said you can become Krishna conscious in the city. He didn't insist that everyone come to the farm and the Varnashram community. But if you think about it, then if your goal of life is to be Krishna conscious, oh, then another reason for not going is that the other family members may not agree. There may be various reasons, but mostly it's, I suppose, devotees feel themselves not ready, or they're not even thinking about it, or the whole consciousness of modern life is just money, 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 money oriented, and they can't imagine what it's like to live without making money. They feel more happy to buy food than to grow it. It's bona fide to buy food, but to grow it is something very strange. That one anecdote, I've told it several times, is recounted in a book by Sahadev Prabhu, that in England, one woman, she took her children to their allotment. It means they have a little land rented from the local corporation in the city, or just outside the city. And she took her young daughter, 5 years old, with her daughter's friend. And she dug up some carrots fresh from her allotment. Allotment, yeah, means little land where people grow mostly vegetables. Not everyone does it. Very few do it. So she dug up one carrot and gave it to her daughter's young friend, and the young girl recoiled and said, "Oh, what's this? My mother doesn't get carrots from the earth. She gets it from Tesco," which is the shopping, what's that called? Chain of stores called Tesco. And in the store, they'll all be looking almost exactly the same length, same, they're perfectly tapered, and they'll all be washed and clean and all this, and same size, because they're grown like to be like this. In Bulgaria, I was there a couple of years ago. Devotees, they had a business. I believe they started that before they came to devotional service, growing cucumbers. So they told me there's so many cucumbers they throw out, because if they're bent a little bit, if, like cucumbers, if you go, they don't all grow perfectly straight like you find in the market. Some of them they twist and so they said, "Well, we can't sell them. They're just the same nutritional value and flavor as the straight looking cucumber, but because it looks strange, or it may be more difficult to put in a plastic packet. That may be a factor also." So they throw. Actually, they have cows, so they feed it to their cows. But so many, they just get thrown out because they don't look proper, according to our consumeristic way of thinking. So, actually, all devotees should come. Maybe some are saying wait and see, but mostly they're not even thinking about it, because it's a completely different kind of consciousness living in the city. And actually, in the village now, in India and most of the places of the world, it's the same consciousness as the city, which is money. You grow food to sell it, and then you buy food to eat it. Srila Prabhupada, he noted that when he was in Mauritius, that everyone is growing sugar. It's a one-crop island, it seems. Sugar cane, I suppose. Because there's sugar beet also, which is grown in northern, temperate climates. There's a tropical climate here. So sugar cane, and they import their vegetables from different parts of the world. Although it's good, they can grow. I've not been there. Has anyone been to Mauritius here? No. But it would seem that it's very fertile land, and they can easily grow all your vegetables. But they, and here in the villages also, you see people buy vegetables. It's ridiculous, completely ridiculous. They're living on the land and growing whatever they're growing around here. Cotton is a major crop, rice or whatever. And they buy vegetables. There could be one problem with some vegetables, which Vishnu Swami Prabhu told me. He's going to all the villages and he said that there is many vegetables, there's a problem, monkeys. The monkeys are everywhere. They didn't used to be everywhere, but now they're in most places that he's visiting in this part of Telangana. So that is a problem. If you grow carrots, they'll pull them up and chew them for you. They'll give them a sampling. Or they're being monkeys, they'll just pull them up and throw them here and there. Because that's the kind of thing that monkeys do. Must be people who have a very nasty streak in them, they become monkeys. Because you find monkeys, they just break things for no reason. They just come and break things. So some vegetables, I guess you could grow like that. I don't know what it's called in English or Hindi. It's that man kochu. I don't think the monkeys would. You know what that is? Man kochu grows underneath the earth, and it has a big like this, and you have to boil it and throw the water out. Otherwise, it hurts your throat. Now you know it. Suran. Suran is the Gujarati word. Hindi also?
Suran.
Hindi also. So there might be some vegetables you could grow, but they might, a Corella, they probably wouldn't be interested in either, the monkeys. Although they might just break it anyway if they think that they can do some harm to you by doing so. Still some vegetables you can grow. So yeah, everyone should come. And just the fact that Srila Prabhupada wanted it should be an inspiration. And that was Srila Prabhupada's plan, social plan, for changing the world. And people have to take part in it, otherwise it's not going to happen. Now our movement made a social plan that the Hindu Vaishnav monks, they have eye camps. But that wasn't Srila Prabhupada's social plan. I mean, it's not that there can't be eye camps. I'm not saying that devotees can't have eye camps, but it's not the major thrust of what we should be doing by any means. If some doctors who are devotees get together and make an eye camp, well, I guess they could do it. But why promote it as this is the work of ISKCON? It's not our work. So anyway, that's another point. What did I write here some months ago? Yeah, so why we have to speak about this again and again? Because devotees have to think about it. This shravan, manan, nididhyasana, this thinking, hearing about it, then we think about it, and then we make it part of our very being. This is from... what's that? From Chandogya, I believe, Upanishad, in relation to the Atma. But it applies to any activity. Srila Prabhupada, he used to say, thinking, feeling, and willing. Is it Chandogya or Brihadaranyaka that comes? Can't remember. Maybe Brihadaranyaka. People are not used to even thinking, like they can't even imagine, because they've been raised in a society in which it's presumed that you get a better life if you get more money and study more and all this kind of thing. So the whole idea of Gurukul is also just, it's It's not within the thinking process of most people. How can you train children like this? So at least we have to think about it and then start it. Those who have the faith, they can start to do it. And gradually might try to convince, but it's a difficult job when our own devotees, they don't know what Srila Prabhupada's mission is, and they don't, even if they've heard of it, they don't really have much faith in it, because they might have heard of it, but again, you have to say it again and again and again for people to pick it up and have faith in it. And they think it's better to sit in a car in a traffic jam. I have my own car, I'm not in a bus. I've achieved a prestigious position. So why should I go to the farm? I'm doing well. But we don't think this is doing well. I mean, what's doing well? Doing well means you're working. Or people think they're doing well. I have a good job in a good company. That means Govinda Das says that Bifale shevinu kripana durajana chapala shuka labalagire. Just uselessly serving a useless person for some useless sense gratification. You say, well, I'm not doing it for sense gratification, I'm doing it to support my family. But in the modern city life, supporting your family doesn't just mean the famous formula roti, kapra, makan, food, clothing, and shelter, but it means you have to get them, you have to send them to a prestigious school, and you have to buy the uniform, and then you have to get them a cell phone, and computer games, and send them to the gym, send them for cricket coaching, and it all costs money, 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 money. So completely in money consciousness. So we have a completely different outlook. Now, this Varnashra, I want to give a more extensive analysis of this in future, how Varnashram is, although apparently rejected by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually not rejected. Rejected at some stage. But in the conversation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Ramananda Rai, which is practically, that is the outline of all Gaudiya theology. This English word, theology. There's no word in Indian languages for theology. There's tattva darshan, but that may be, that word tattva darshan, that can be used by other, by atheists also, by Mayavadis and even by atheists. So the point is to understand reality, whereas to have the word theology separate from philosophy, it gives the idea that it's not philosophy in the same way that philosophy is philosophy. Anyway, that's another subject. So in there, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected so many proposals of Rai Ramananda regarding sadhya sadhana tattva, the goal of life and how to attain it. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted when Rai Ramananda, He spoke a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, the famous verse, a famous verse. Jnane prayasam udapasya namanta eva jivanti sanmukharitam bhavadiyavartam sthane sthita shudhigatang tanuvang manobhya ya prayasam jitapachito apitai strilokyam. Ye prayas. Yaha becomes ye. So, the meaning of this is that one who gives up his own or the ascending process, Jnane prayasam. Of course, this very word jnana could be analyzed in so many ways. Here I'll just say, one's own efforts at self-realization. Jnane prayasam uddhapasya, giving up one's own efforts at self-realization, or efforts at self-realization ending, or aiming at an impersonal understanding. Jnane prayasam uddhapasya, becoming humble, certainly humility is required. Namanta eva. One should live for and by hearing from realized devotees about your, in this case your means Krishna's, because this verse was spoken by Brahma to Krishna, hearing about you, topics about you. One should dedicate oneself fully, mind, body and words, in doing so. Sthane stita, remaining in one's position. One who does this can conquer you, even though you are unconquerable. So, although all the words are important, these words, sthane stita, remaining in one's position, these words are often emphasized. Often emphasized by Srila Prabhupada, that you don't have to change your position. Whatever you do, you just remain in your position and become Krishna conscious. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada, he did take people out of their position. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who approved this verse as the first level of God consciousness according to his system, otherwise what Ramananda was speaking was, it was also God consciousness. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wanted to present pure devotional service. So pure devotional service begins with the, what was presented previously was not pure devotional service, or specifically focused on pure. It's not that it couldn't be within pure devotional service, but not focused specifically on it. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted this, that one should remain in one's position, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, just recently, prior to meeting Ramananda, had accepted sannyas. He had not stayed in his own position. Even though in many ways you could say his position was very favorable for hearing and chanting about Krishna. But he wanted others to do so also, so he accepted sannyas. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even prior to taking sannyas, he had the habit of uprooting people. When he was in East Bengal, this was prior to his taking sannyas. He never, after accepting sannyas, he never went to East Bengal. He went once in his youth, during the time of he'd just been married, his first wife, to his first wife. So when he met Tapan Mishra, who also asked him about sadhya sadhana tattva, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had already given the answer to that himself. He later asked Rai Ramananda, but he himself had given the answer that sadhya sadhana tattva jekichu shakal hari nama sankirtane milibe shakal, that all the truths of sadhya, the goal of life, and sadhana, how to attain it, they all coalesce in Harinama Sankirtan. So Tapan Mishra said, well, that's great, thanks very much. So I'm going to come to Navadvipa and join you. And he asked permission from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In this case, when you ask permission, it's in such a case, it would be considered a formality, an etiquette, that you don't just say, well, I'm going to come to Navadvipa and join you. You ask permission. And naturally, Tapan Mishra expected to get permission. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no. You go to Varanasi. I'll meet you there. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met him later, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had accepted sannyas. So it means it was already in his mind, even though he married again after that. After, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in East Bengal, his first wife died of snake bite. The separation from her husband took the form of a snake and bit her, and she died. So in East Bengal also, Lokanath Goswami, Bhugarbha Goswami, Bhugarbha, he wasn't from East Bengal, Lokanath. Actually, I'm not sure if that even falls in. Now it's in Bangladesh, but it's just on the border. It might be traditionally part of Goura. I think Jeshur, though, it falls in Joshoha district, now known as Jeshur. So I believe that was traditionally part of West Bengal. Anyway, before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, he sent Lokanath to Vrindavan. Go and live in Vrindavan. I'll meet you there. Again, Lokanath also wanted to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, you go to Vrindavan, I'll meet you there. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went after taking sannyas. So, of course, it's not that... Anyway, I digress. I shouldn't digress too much. So Lokanath and Bhugarbha, he sent to Vrindavan even before he took sannyas. And after taking sannyas, he went to Ramakeli and took Rupan Sanatan, Dabir Kas and Sakar Malik. He took them out of their situation. He didn't say to them, Sthane Stita. He sent them off to Vrindavan. And Subuddhi Rai also. I won't get into all the details, it'll become long. But he also sent him to Vrindavan. Subuddhi Rai, anyway, I shouldn't get into the details. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't always follow that. Sometimes he did. When mostly he did, it seems, because before that he came to Kurukshetra, which is now in Andhra Pradesh. That time it was all under Prataparudra Maharaj of Cuttack. His capital was Cuttack in what is now called Orissa, Utkal. So he said to him, he gave him Krishna consciousness as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was preaching, and then the Brahmana, he wanted to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, Grihe Rahi Krishna Naam Niranta Laiba. You remain at home and take the name of Krishna always. Literally, take the name. In Bengali, you say, take the name. And you could say, chant the name. You could also say, but you say, take the name. Grihe Rahi Krishna Naam Niranta Laiba. Then, oh yeah, because the Brahmin also said, I want to join you. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, you stay here. Stay in your house. And don't only stay at home, but jare dekho tare koha Krishna upadesh amar agyai guru hoye taro edesh. And staying at home, whoever you see, whoever you meet, you instruct them in the instructions of Krishna. And on my order become a guru and you deliver this land here. And then, because the Brahmana had said, I'm in my home, in my village, there's the Vishai Taranga, the waves of materialistic life, of sense gratification. I'm drowning in them, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Kabhu na badhibe tomai e Vishai Taranga, punarapi e thai pabe morasonga. The Brahmana had said that I want to go with you and have your association, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, that if you just do this, you remain at home, chant Hare Krishna, preach to others, then the waves of materialistic sense gratification will not affect you, and right here in this place you'll get my association. So this was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu preaching, Sthane Stita, remain in your place. But he didn't do it in all cases. Some he told, get up, go. You get out of this situation. And Srila Prabhupada had a plan to do that. He didn't say, actually he didn't have so many Grihastha disciples. most of his disciples were young unmarried men and women, and those who did marry after joining his movement, they mostly lived in the temples. And then, seeing that the temple can't support all the devotees, was also we can say that's another reason Srila Prabhupada saw the need for having these farms. It was always part of Srila Prabhupada's plan, even before he came to the West, to have such communities. But he put that into action. He had Grihastha disciples. There was Kshira Dakshai, for instance, in London, was an Indian man, Gupta, who became Srila Prabhupada's disciple. I believe they're already worshipping the deity at home, and Srila Prabhupada gave them initiation. The whole family, this two sons, husband, wife, two sons, and told them to remain at home. They had a small business, home business, shop at home. And he told them, and then Srila Prabhupada stay at home and you preach also. So he didn't insist that everyone come and join the farm, but that the Varnashram community, but that definitely was Srila Prabhupada's plan for most people too. And in this way he wanted to drastically alter human society. That was Srila Prabhupada's manifesto, to change the whole way of human society. And now we may say, well, technology is there and we can't ignore it. And that's a fact. Pakistan has an atom bomb, nuclear bomb, whatever they're called. So if everyone in India was to say, okay, now we're all going to live on the land and no more machines, Pakistan would say, Allahu Akbar. And the law of India will change from some. The present law of India is based on British justice, mixed up with Hindu law, and some various speculations. But they would change to Sharia law. And we don't want that. So we can't ignore technology. So how to practice Varnashram on a massive scale in an age of technology, that has to be considered also. I'm not going to discuss that right now. But Srila Prabhupada, he did change people's situation. He gave sannyas to young married men. Devotees would join the movement, they get married, and after 2 or 3 years married, Srila Prabhupada gave sannyas to many. Many were like that. Several of Srila Prabhupada's sannyasi disciples they weren't married. They were brahmacharis, and then they took sannyas, but many were married. I don't think they had children. Hridayananda Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Bhavananda Maharaj, Hansaduta Maharaj, Gurudas Maharaj, these are just some names coming to mind, who were married. They had young wives who were devotees, and Srila Prabhupada gave them sannyas. We don't do that nowadays. It's understood that was an emergency. Of course, it's still an emergency because Krishna consciousness needs to be practiced, spread widely all over the world, and sannyas is also required for that. But we also found that by giving sannyas to young men, it often happened that shortly down the line we had another kind of emergency when the sannyasis didn't maintain their vows. But I'm just giving that as an example, that Srila Prabhupada, he did this sthane sthita, although that's the general direction, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, in most cases, he preached like that. Stay in your home, chant Hare Krishna in most cases means that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami writes that this incident with the Korma Brahmana, this was repeated again, repeated repeatedly. All over Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as he traveled over South India, and presumably on his other travels, his later travels to Vrindavan also. Well, he had several travels. He went, yeah. Those are the two main ones, his tour of South India and his travel to Vrindavan. So please don't take photos now. Just listen now. So, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami said that on his tour of South India, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this would be a repeated scene, that he would meet someone, infuse them with Krishna consciousness, prema bhakti, they would want to come and join him and leave their home, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, no, stay at home and practice Krishna consciousness at home and preach. So that was his general direction. But in some cases, most notably his own, he didn't follow that. In some cases, he changed people's situation. In most cases, because he wanted them to do some very significant service, he saw them as leaders. And that was the case with the eight Goswamis of Vrindavan. Well, not all of them, but sometimes it said the eight Goswamis. Before Rupa and Sanatan went there, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent Lokanath and Bhugarbha. And they were also given the same instruction that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to Sanatan Goswami, which is to practice Krishna consciousness, to lupta tirtha udha, to find the end and revive the old holy places, the places of Krishna's pastimes. So he did that with Rupa and Sanatan, and they had some very, obviously very significant service. And there's no Gauriya Sampradaya without Rupa and Sanatan. Without me and you, it won't make much difference. But without them, there's no Gauriya Sampradaya. So he did that with them. With Subhadi Rai, it was more okay. Anyway, his family life was, his life as he knew it was finished. If you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you can understand. He had some calamity in his life. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, okay, it's a good chance, get out. And he must have been get out of the home. He must have been quite old also. So we can say at least to Vanaprastas, that you don't remain just sitting at home. When you're older, your children are married, then don't just sit at home and do something for the Krishna conscious movement. Get out and do something. Get out of the home. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to take sannyas, but you could at least join a community like this. Give guidance to younger devotees and become active in Krishna consciousness. Very active. So, in some cases, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he pulled people out. And Srila Prabhupada did also, the examples I gave of young men giving them sannyas. In some cases, it was also due to the insistence of the young men who wanted to take sannyas. I want to be a sannyas, because it was considered prestigious, which isn't a very good reason to want to take sannyas. To get the prestige of being a sannyasi. In fact, it's a terrible, completely the wrong reason. It's not just not a good reason, but it's very wrong reason. But it seems Srila Prabhupada also liked to make sannyasis. That's his Guru Maharaj did. He liked that. Because he was pushing devotees for renunciation, to give up their attachments to this material world. Of course, Srila Prabhupada was what you could say also pragmatic and realistic also. And that in the first canto of Bhagavatam, there's one verse in the purport, Srila Prabhupada gives, well, in several of those purports in that section, he gives his blueprint or manifesto for restructuring society. So that verse is when Kali, the personality of Kali, was given the four places to reside in, that Striyo, Dyutam, Panam, what's that? And the other one is meat. I can't remember the words. So, or maybe only three are mentioned there. No, it must be four mentioned there. So the four places, or the four sinful activities are illicit sex, gambling, or meat eating and intoxication. So in that purport, Srila Prabhupada says that boys and girls, they should be married young, as soon as possible. So he wanted that, but he also wanted that there should be renunciation. Those who are fit for that, they should accept sannyas. So of course these are all details, and the essence is to be mad after Krishna, to love Krishna. But the details are important also. Varnashram is also just details. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Eho Bhajya, when he was proposed by Ramananda Rai, follow Varnashram and worship Krishna. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected. Varnashram acharavata purushena parapuman vishnur aradhite pantan danya tattva shakarana. It's right there in Shastra. Worship Krishna, following Varnashram, there's no other way to satisfy the Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Eho Bhajya. Same thing in Bhagavad Gita, Sakarmanato abhyacha siddhing vindati manava. Every man can achieve perfection by worshipping the Supreme Lord by doing his own work. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected this as external. So, Varnashram, it's also a detail. The real business or the real goal of life is Krishna Prem, to revive our dormant love of Krishna. But Varnashram is also important. It's to make a favorable situation for practicing Krishna consciousness. And it is a big endeavor. We may think, well, it's an over-endeavor. Over-endeavor, in one sense we could think like that, but then if we don't take up Varnashram, then everything's an over-endeavor. The whole endeavor to become Krishna conscious becomes very, very difficult because of, city life means the whole atmosphere and the association, the whole outlook, mindset is antithetical to Krishna consciousness. So this is required. So there are a few thoughts about this important topic of reviving Varnashram as far as possible. As Srila Prabhupada says, it's not possible to fully revive it in the modern age, but as far as possible to create a favorable situation for people to practice Krishna consciousness. As I often repeat that I think it was earlier this year at our fledgling farm project in near Karumandurai in Tamil Nadu. One of the devotees, young Grihastha, asked me that, there are so many disadvantages and inconveniences and of this coming, having left the city, and we can't be, we feel more secure in many ways in the city. I said to him that, well, that's true, but here, since you've come here, you have full morning program and evening. They have a truncated, they do have an evening program, but short, not full evening program. And you're living with devotees all the time. So this is very advantageous to your Krishna conscious, which you didn't have previously. You didn't have that opportunity. So the whatever disadvantages are there, or might be seen as some material disadvantages, the spiritual advantages are tremendous, which you'll never, you might be more comfortable in the city, but you won't get, I asked him, did you get that? Were you rising early every morning and having a full morning program? No. Did you, how often did you have association devotees? Once a week, all that getting come together. So he understood then that this is much advantageous. So Hare Krishna, anything? Any points? Any points? Point. Like sticking in a needle. Of course, it's another usage of the word point, but. The farm in Hungary is very successful. The farm, Krishna Conscious Farm Project, started by Shivaram Maharaj. Yeah.
So I've never heard about that or gone there, but how is it successful? Means they are following everything properly according to Srila Prabhupada.
Are they following everything properly according to Srila Prabhupada? Well, it's a long way from being self-sufficient in terms of producing all they need. And it's actually, and I'm not saying this to denigrate it. They've done, no doubt, Shivaram Maharaj and all the devotees there have done something wonderful. But it is, in one way, dependent upon the outside culture, and as much as income comes from outside. Income. It's not that they're growing all their food, or that they even, as far as I know, have a short-term or even medium-term plan to grow their own food. Maybe not even long-term, I don't know. But they do rely on, one thing is tourism traffic. They get money from tourism in the summer. That's a major tourist place for people from all over Europe. That area, there's a huge inland lake which people come to and waste their time. So they hear about this farm and they visit it because it's something interesting for people to. It's interesting, and people like to visit interesting things. Like they go to wax museums and what's that called? The planetariums, and they like to go and see museums. Like they have dinosaur exhibits, skeletons. They're not real skeletons of dinosaurs, but they just pretend they are, and so on. So people like to see these kind of things, something different and interesting. So they visit, and they have devotees collecting and sending money. So it is, it's doing well, but it seems to be, it's a long way to go to self-sufficiency. But you can say they've made a good start. And they've also done well for a Western country, in as much as they, now I don't know much about it, so but I'm just saying what I understand to be correct, that they have also negotiated their way through the, or negotiated their existence with the broader society. In as much as, the Hungarian government has a system that people can give money from their income to some religious institution, and that will be deducted from their taxes. So they've got that. There's a major form of income for that, for them. That they're one of the groups which is allowed to accept money from the indirectly from the government. So that's there, and they've worked very carefully with the local authorities and with the local government authority. Of course, Hungary is a small country, but the same principle could be applied everywhere. So they did have difficult situation recently where the government tried to demote them from the status of being an accepted religion, but that was also negotiated through by saying that we're Hindus, which I'm not much fond of. But yeah, that seems to be going quite well, that project. They have householder devotees who are living there. One thing I heard is that they don't have children, which to me seems to be against the whole idea of the project. We should have, the householders, they're not allowed to have children. But I would say have children, have as many, have plenty of children. That's all part of traditional culture, have children, and don't think that children are a burden. As long as we live in the money culture, children will be a burden, unless you're rich. But even then they're a burden, because you want to enjoy your life with all the money you've got. And with the idea of sense gratification as the central theme of society, which wasn't there previously, that came with this consumer society. At least people had an idea of responsibility in family life, in the Western world also. But children become a burden because it costs a lot of money to look after them. In India especially, because most of the countries of Europe are socialistic, and that means that they're mixed economies. They have capitalism and private ownership of companies, but the government provides, or they force you to have education. They provide schools, and from the materialistic point of view, a good standard of school. Whereas in India, if you send your kids to the government school, they don't get a good education. But they do in the Western country, all of Europe actually, Western Europe, what used to be called Eastern Europe, they have, they want to have good education because they want the people to be competent members of their society, a complex, industrialized, technological society. So they need people to be educated to run the whole thing on. So, yeah, and they have, in many countries, they have comprehensive healthcare systems. So you don't, if you get sick, you don't have to take a loan for 20 lakhs or something to get treatment, or just die, as happens in India, in many cases. In America also, they make this propaganda against the government helping the citizens. They say it's socialism. We can't have the government look after the medical needs of the people, because that's socialism, and then that's like communism. But it's terrible. I mean, in the absence of local care, as in traditional systems, then the government should take care of. But in America, they don't. If you're sick and you can't pay the bills, you die. That's all. If it's a fatal disease. So it's not so much of a burden. But here in India, it definitely is. Education is expensive. Healthcare is expensive. And the government doesn't help. There are government hospitals and government schools, but they're almost useless. And if you need some complex treatment, it's going to cost lots of money. Of course, in traditional societies, people don't get sick so much from eating all the poisoned food and the tampered with food and breathing in poisonous chemicals all their life. And the local aid is there also. People know how to treat common diseases with herbs, and or just fasting. Just if you get sick, you just fast, that's all. And then when you're better, you get up and go on. But so yeah, have children. So that's kind of it. That point I was making about previously, people had in the Western world also, there was a sense of responsibility in family life, which I'm not saying is totally absent by any means in the modern world, but we can see that shifted by one factor, and that is divorce. People just
they don't like, they just walk out of the home. Or either the man walks out, or the wife kicks the husband out, or whatever. They don't have a sense of responsibility to their partner and to God. Marriage is a religious function, and to children, especially when there are children. Now, that just reminds me, last time I was in Dubai recently, it was just last month, I was in a computer shop trying to get a keyboard according to my liking, which I didn't get because mostly the keyboards there are with Arabic figures on them. I didn't want them. Anyway, that's not what I was going to speak about. So I was speaking to a salesman in the shop, very nice young man, Indian man, and I said to him that you should do something for your spiritual side. I said to him, there are so many nice young men like yourself, especially Indian men, who are very, very nice, very good people, but you're in Maya. And you should take to spiritual life. And he said, not in a challenging way, he said, no, he said, I'm married now. Before I had Maya, now I have responsibility. So I guess before I had Maya, I guess he was drinking and things like this, but now I have responsibility. So he had the idea that he's married. That's very good to think, now I have responsibility. I can't just be running around here and there. I have to be very serious. I have to earn money, look after my family. So it's very good that he had the idea that now I'm married, I have responsibility. But the idea that he didn't have Maya because he was responsible in family life, that's got nothing to do with the class. But it just came to my mind that this idea that responsibility, okay, that's dharma. But that is the idea of responsibility in family life within the Indian or Hindu context is understood to be dharma. But that's simply to follow dharma is not the ultimate goal of life and is not in and of itself spiritual. As we learn from the Bhagavata, that in the second chapter of the first canto, there are several verses. I want to say one of them in order, so I'm just trying to think which order they come in. In order for this discussion, that first is that that Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam Swanushtita Dharma Swanushtita Pungsang Vishvaksena Katasu Yaha Notpadiyad Yadi Ratim Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam. That one may be following dharma in terms of worldly responsibility and worshipping God, which is also part of that. But it's not enough to worship God, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Eho Bhajya. It's not enough simply to follow Varnashram and worship God, but one actually has to develop a taste for hearing about Him. So I guess that's the essence of it. Those others are there also. That dharma se hi apavargasya narto tai upakalpate. Nartasya dharma kantasya kamo labhaya hi smritaha. That dharma is not meant to lead to karma, but rather all one's karma, all one's desire should be centered on apavarga, on becoming free from materialistic life. Dharma is not an accessory to material life. It is meant for becoming free from material life. So it just struck me that that's among pious people, this is a common misunderstanding, that if you do your work and you look after your family and you go to the temple, then that's it. That's all. Karmanyevadikaraste mapaleshu kadachana. Okay, that's... I'm working, but I'm not doing it simply for personal enjoyment. I'm looking after my family. I don't take the result. I give it to my family. But Krishna says, mat karma krim. You work for me. Yad karoshi, Hare Krishna, brain fag, brain dead. Yad karoshi, yad ashnashi, yad jahosi, dadasi yat, yad tapasyasi, kaunta yat tat karoshva, madarpanam. Everything should be done specifically for Krishna's pleasure. So these are misunderstandings. Many misunderstandings, many, many. That's why we have to have classes to become ourselves free from misunderstandings. And so that we can preach to others and tell others. One way of preaching is just to, here in India, you can just get people to, okay, come on, chant, one round, two rounds, three rounds, four rounds. Okay, stop eating meat. All right, now, okay, get initiated. But hearing. Otherwise, we find in our modern ISKCON, because of lack of proper instruction, that there are many initiated devotees who are following all these principles, but they're completely way, way out in terms of proper understanding of what Krishna consciousness is all about. And therefore, we get this I meet a devotee for the first time in my life, and he tells me, "Oh, we just started one more ICAM," as if this is his Krishna consciousness. And they preach it. They preach it right here in Hyderabad and so many places. Your study is your devotional service. Your job is your devotional service. You should have a good career and be respectable. That is your devotional service. It may possibly be, if one has a very clear sense of living in and preaching Krishna consciousness, and it may possibly be in a subsidiary way, just like brushing your teeth is also devotional service if you do it to maintain your body for serving Krishna. But to say that it's your devotional, to say that earning money and having a respectable position in society is your devotional service, as if it's on the same level as hearing and chanting about Krishna, is a misrepresentation. But people like it. It appeals to them. And then you'll get many people ready to chant Hare Krishna. If you just change it a little bit, have eye camps, and then your pious sense of wanting to help others is channeled into having eye camps, which doesn't help them at all. It may be better they didn't have good eyes, and then they wouldn't watch TV. So, it doesn't, in and of itself, it's of no value. It can be of value if you give them Krishna consciousness along with it, but at least the way it's promoted, the Krishna consciousness is completely hidden away from it. That, as we saw, that little advertisement for the eye camps, which came on Dandavats, the official website of ISKCON, in which there's no, their whole speech is about how we're helping people and they're very grateful and there's no mention of Krishna. At the end, it just says presented by so-and-so Hindu Vaishnava monk, International Society for Krishna Consciousness, as if this is the work of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So what I'm saying is that we have to give a very clear understanding of what Krishna consciousness is. Otherwise, we may get many people who are chanting Hare Krishna and following the principles and maybe even reading Srila Prabhupada's books, but they don't understand it. Because they have to hear what's in the books again and again and again to absorb it. Just like you're not the body. You say, "Oh, I already read that in Bhagavad. I did my Bhakti Shastri course. I already got full marks, so I know I'm not the body." But You may have studied it, and you may theoretically say it, but to actually realize that, we have to hear again and again and again. So it may be that we're bringing many, many people, and we are expanding, and we think it's very successful, but we're not bringing them to pure devotional service. We're bringing them to mixed devotional service. If there's misunderstandings, if we don't have a clear understanding of Siddhanta, it means there must be mixed devotional service. But if there's not prema siddhanta, and of course it's enough to speak of prema, but prema means there must be no material desire. If there's wrong philosophy, means there must be wrong desire. First of all, it means karma or jnana, material or mental sense gratification. It means that if we were actually pleasing, wanting to please Krishna, we're properly focused, then we wouldn't say the wrong philosophy or present it in the first place. And if we do present the wrong philosophy, then people, they are going to get the wrong idea. And then they're not going to be clear that the goal of life is to serve Krishna. So if people think that they're being a member of this movement, that the greatest thing is that we just set up a new eye camp, they're not going to get love of Krishna. Because that's not their focus, that's not their goal. And they think that setting up eye camps is on the same level as, or maybe more important, to this devotee it seems to him to be more, he didn't tell me we were distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, or it's that to him was the most important thing. So it's been elevated above hearing and chanting about Krishna. It's been elevated above understanding that we're not the body, which is supposed to be what our preaching is. But instead our preaching is we're feeding children, we're opening eye camps. That means it's become more important. So unless we speak the right thing again and again and again, then we're going to speak the wrong thing again and again and again. And we're going to go off course. So we should get on course, that's all. Yeah, anything else?
A question in relation to Ekadashi.
Any other questions about what we're discussing here?
This question about Hungary farm, is there any other farm in the world which is running according to Srila Prabhupada's standard?
Is there any other farm in the world which is running according to Srila Prabhupada's standard and successfully? Running according to Srila Prabhupada's standard. Well, I would say they still haven't. I think they would probably agree in Hungary that they also haven't come to the standard. They know that, self-sufficiency. But they're certainly serious about it, and more serious than that. Is there any other farm in the world that's running according to Srila Prabhupada's standard? Major farm community, there may be individual farms, major farm community that's running like that, successfully, I don't know of any other.
West Virginia, New
Taliban? No. Most of the properties that were acquired, the farm properties that are acquired by ESKOM were acquired either during Srila Prabhupada's personal presence or shortly after. And then shortly, either in the 1970s or early 1980s. And then after that, as a movement, we gave up on farms. But almost all of them have a few devotees living there, who most of whom commute into the city, or they're earning money. They're not growing their own food to live. There are a few devotees here and there living on the farms who do that. But there aren't any real farm communities as such. They have farms, but most of the devotees are not farming or living simply or like that. So why devotees say, well, the farm communities have failed. Well, that's true in one sense. It doesn't mean they have to fail or that it can't be done. It may be, I didn't hear that, but it may be that after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sent devotees to the West in the 1930s, why did no one try again later? Maybe they're all saying, well, we tried and it failed. Doesn't mean at all. It didn't work out, doesn't mean that it has to not work out. Yeah, you were going to ask. Do you want to ask anything? I thought I saw your hand kind of stirring there, as if you're thinking of putting it up.
It was kind of discussion thing. I see in both cases there is slow brainwashing kind of authority kind of thing. There is a hierarchy of the things, how they work from higher order to lower order, and so their devotees come, new devotees come, and they've been kept in one small group where there is one leader. I mean, it's a good system, but what they preach, authority.
Yeah, this is another whole big discussion. I don't think we can get into this now. You told me 2-3 days ago that Sarvabhauma Prabhu, who's a big preacher, big in every way. He travels around, does a lot of preaching, and has a very big body. He has a very big family also. So, he told you, or where did he say that?
Told in Belgaum.
He said that in a public lecture or in among a small group of devotees. He said he's very afraid of the mentors, the counselors, the shiksha gurus. Bhakti vrikshas, that's what you say, bhakti vrikshas. That's another big discussion, how you get all these little groups with little leaders who themselves have never had much training. And yeah, it can be problematic. I've seen that myself.
That's what they say, you follow.
Just do what I say.
Yeah.
Put on your blinkers. Yeah, just do what I say and that's it. Then, and stupid people, they follow. Okay, question about Ekadashi, then I think we'll finish.
This Ekadashi story circulated in Pampo. It is given that Lord, after fighting with Muradhanam for 1,000 celestial years, God became fatigued and went to hide in a cave in Badrikashrama. He slept there in fear. And without his knowledge, a goddess came out of his body, fought with them and killed him. Lord was surprised that this goddess killed the demon. And it was not with his knowledge. So he said, I do not know how to take this.
Stories in Shastra. There are many stories in Shastra which are meant for this principle, Yipi anya devata bhakta yajante shadayanvita tepi mameva kot. No, that's the wrong verse. Yo yo yang yang tanung bhakta shate. I always get those two verses mixed up. Yo yo yang yang tanung bhakta shate achita michati tasya tasya achalang shradham tameva vidadhamyaham. Krishna says, whoever wants to worship any god apart from myself, I make their faith strong. So there are also apparent shastras which make Vishnu seem inferior to Shiva or Durga. So that's meant for people like that. Stories of Vishnu being subordinate to Shiva, Durga, and so on. We have to understand everything in the light of Srimad Bhagavatam. Why so? If you want in detail, this Tattva Sandarbha with commentary has recently been published in English.
Yeah.
Gopi Purandan Prabhu's translation. So that establishes why we accept the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam over anything else. And in future, we should have our boys all trained in Sanskrit so they can read it in the sense, all these things in Sanskrit. Because the translation, something's going to be lacking. You can't get fully what's implied in languages as different as Sanskrit and English. Yeah, okay, one more thing, then we'll finish.
You have the copies made in Hyderabad.
You have copies in Hyderabad. Okay, that's good. Is that recommended for everyone, Tattva Sandarbha? Well, read Srila Prabhupada's books first, and then there are so many things we have to read. That's another reason to have these farm communities, that those who have the inclination, instead of working... How much does the average person work in India? At least 10 hours a day. 10, 12, 14 or more hours a day. And then you have to travel to up and down to work, and then you're exhausted and your nerves are frazzled, so you shout at your wife and then she shouts back, and then you're just completely... how are you going to read anything? And you squeeze in your round somewhere or other, maybe. This life is not for philosophy. So better come live peacefully, chant Hare Krishna. Then we can discuss all these things. Then we can study. Is it for everyone? No, it's... Tattva Sandarbha is meant for those who are going to be especially philosophically minded. That's why Srila Prabhupada wanted a class of brahmanas. Not that everyone's going to be great scholar. Okay, Hare Krishna. There's some prasad to distribute here. Anukalpa is the word. What we call Ekadashi prasad. Anukalpa means this. Not Annakalpa, Anukalpa. Actually, Anukalpa. Anukalpa is...